I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, a conversation about bikes in Baltimore. More and more people are pedaling their way to and from work and around the city. Baltimore has introduced a bike share program, and bike lanes have been installed on Roland Avenue in North Baltimore, on Maryland Avenue from Charles Village to the Inner Harbor, and in Canton on Potomac Street between Eastern Avenue and Boston Street. The Canton project has laid bare tensions between drivers, residents, and cyclists. Some residents are concerned about the loss of parking spaces and whether or not fire trucks can fit in the newly designed street. Cycling advocates call it bike lash. The mayor says the city will review all of Baltimore's bike lanes and modify them if necessary. Liz Cornish of Bike More, Canton resident Steve Bloom, and Baltimore Sun reporter Luke Broadwater join me. We'll talk cycling in the city right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad that you've decided to join us for Midday. Welcome. So cities from Tallahassee to Spokane have implemented comprehensive networks of protected bike lanes on major city streets, and Baltimore is following suit. Baltimore City recently installed semi-protected bike lanes on several major roads throughout the city, most recently on Maryland Avenue, Roland Avenue, and Potomac Street. However, immediately after construction of the Potomac Street lane in Canton, some residents complained primarily about limited options for parking. Then the Baltimore City Fire Department assessed that the road was too narrow for emergency vehicles. We'll give you an update on that situation today, and we'll take your calls and comments about whether or not you find Baltimore a bike-friendly place and whether or not you think that we should be sure that Charm City is as bike-friendly as possible. What will the controversy over the Potomac Street bike lane mean for the future of bike infrastructure in our city? And what challenges do we face as we strive to ensure that cyclists and drivers and pedestrians can coexist on our streets? Luke Broadwater has been covering this story and many others for the Baltimore Sun. He's with me today here in Studio A. He's an award-winning journalist who writes about Baltimore City and local politics. Luke, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you.
And Liz Cornish also joins us. She's the executive director of Bike More, a Baltimore-based nonprofit that works towards sustainable infrastructure and policy for bikers around the city. Liz also recently served as the women bike manager at the League of American Bicyclists. Bike More sued the city when it announced that it would be tearing down the bike lane over on Potomac Street in Canton. Liz, good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
And Steve Bloom lives in Canton, and he's active with a group called Canton Neighbors for a Better Potomac Street Bike Lane. He joins us on the phone. Mr. Bloom, welcome.
Glad to be here.
You are welcome to join us on the phone as well. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, that would be a grand idea, @midday. Tom Hall is our handle. So, Luke, give us a little history on this. This sort of started back in late May with the construction of this bike lane over on Potomac Street, and it runs from Eastern Avenue down to Boston Street.
Right. I'll go even a little bit farther back. For several years, the city of Baltimore has been concerned that its bike infrastructure was not up to snuff compared to other cities. We really didn't have hardly any protected bike lanes in Baltimore City only a few years ago. Within the past few years, though, however, the city, as you mentioned, has put in the Maryland Avenue cycle track, which is widely used and I think people really like. They put in a protected bike lane in Roland Park. And the last, most recent one was this one in Canton. When that one went in, I think for the first time we saw a real coordinated backlash against one of the bike lanes. Immediately, people who lived on the street started to raise concerns about fire safety and ambulances getting onto the street. There was also concerns about a lack of parking. The fire department raised some concerns as well. And the city, we had a change in administrations. A new mayor had come in, had new top people, and they said, whoa, the past administration put this in not up to our standards, and proceeded to start to take it out. That's when Bike More and others got involved. There was a lawsuit, some back and forth in court, and eventually the city reached a settlement with Bike More. That has been described by the mayor as putting in reverse angle parking on one side of the street and preserving the protected bike lane while widening the driving part of the road so that emergency vehicles can go down. So that was the last big update we've had. They did say they were going to now have meet with community groups and come up with a final plan. And I think that's where Mr. Bloom has come in as well with his group, which is Canton Neighbors for a Better Bike Lane.
So for an observer who hasn't, you know, followed it super closely the way you have, for folks who are listening in and sort of hearing about this maybe for the first time, they built this thing on Potomac Street. They put up the barriers. They, you know, changed the signs. They put it up. And then, and that happened in the Rawlings-Blake administration. Right?
Well, it was planned out under Rawlings-Blake, but then it started to go in under Pew. Department. Yeah.
So then they decide, at that point, they realize that the fire trucks can't fit down the thing. Is this like cut once, measure twice? I mean, how did that happen?
Well, so, yeah. So that's what, if you listen to the Pew administration, that's what they say. They sort of blame the past administration. They say if they'd come up with a better design, then we could have avoided some of these problems. I think if you listen to bike advocates, they'll say it's a very similar design to many other streets of the same size. And why did this one raise concerns when reverse angle parking elsewhere in the city didn't, or bike lanes elsewhere in the city didn't? And they can point to a number of streets that are just as narrow as this one where those same things were done. Having gone out there myself, I do see the community's concerns. It's not always things that sometimes always make perfect sense on paper don't always, when you actually put them in reality, play out the exact same way. When I was driving down there, I did notice it was hard to turn onto the street, and I could see why people, if my little beat up old Corolla is having trouble navigating it, you know, I could see how bigger vehicles would have problems, and I do see why they were concerned.
I should note that we got in touch with Jim Smith, who serves as the community liaison in the mayor's office, and invited him on the program, and he declined our offer as well. We got in touch with Michelle Purciao, and I'm not sure I'm even pronouncing her name correctly. She's the brand new director of the Department of Transportation for the city of Baltimore, and she's been on the job for like a week or something, or 2 weeks. She also declined. So we don't have anybody here from the city, but we do have Liz Cornish. And as I mentioned earlier, Steve Bloom is on the phone. So Liz, your organization, Bike More, when the city announced and they just sent a letter to residents saying, we're going to take this thing down, you filed a lawsuit. And I know that suit is ongoing, and you got to be careful about what we talk about today because of that. It's an ongoing legal procedure. But what was the gist of your action at that time when the city announced that they were going to take the Potomac Street bike lane down?
Sure. So Potomac Street was identified in a series of community planning documents that date back to as long as 5 years ago as being potential for providing connection through some type of bike facility between Patterson Park and Canton Waterfront Park. So this was all community driven. The city then took that community plan and applied for federal transportation dollars to then install a two-way protected bike facility connecting those community assets. What the plan and the federal grant ultimately will fund is a phased approach. So the plan was to install a temporary or just paint and flex post. I say temporary, that's all that Maryland Avenue will probably ever be. So let's just put that in perspective. But they were going to install paint and flex post to create the design, provide a year of community feedback before the majority of the federal dollars designated for this project went into stormwater management treatment systems. This is bioswales, street trees, and other treatments that really start to address some of the stormwater issues that we're experiencing in Southeast. So bike lanes, while they make it safer for people to travel on bike and they calm traffic, making roads safer for everybody that use them, they also create new allocations of public space for other really important things that we have to manage as a city. So as this construction began on the phase one facility in April, residents started raising concerns. And I think one of the main concerns was communication. What's happening? How come I didn't find out about it? And I think in a change of administration, I think we can always improve, or the city can always improve about how they manage it. Certainly as an advocate, I'm quite often critical of how the city and the Department of Transportation rolls out projects. But I think in this instance, it's well documented that the city did an adequate job of reaching out to the community and alerting them what happened. The mayor's administration ultimately made the choice to respond at first by modifying the design. And then a week later, after we organized over 1,000 phone calls and emails to the mayor's office stating that the redesign was inadequate, did not meet our standards of safety, they ultimately decided to remove the lane and go back to the planning process. We felt that this was an important moment and an inflection point for Baltimore City and their vision for transportation moving forward. And we felt that we had exhausted our options of creating white papers and sitting down with city officials and connecting our local electeds with national experts, and that left us with this option of filing the temporary restraining order. And all we really wanted was to stop the deconstruction of the bike lane in order to get folks back at the table and imagining a good alternative. That was accomplished through our settlement agreement, and we look forward to continuing to be a partner with the city as we champion more bike lanes being installed throughout all of Baltimore's neighborhoods.
All right, so before we go to Steve, let me just pick up on one small point you said, and that is those temporary little sticks that stick out of the ground on Maryland Avenue, which is one of the streets that I travel every day on my way here. Those are temporary?
So in this case, on Potomac Street, they were intended to be. But on many streets and in many bike facilities, there's lots of ways that you can protect bike lanes. Sometimes you can do that with a lane of parked cars. In Baltimore City, the Department of Transportation has chosen to protect them with flex posts to make sure that people park appropriately in the parking lane adjacent to the bike lane. They can stay there and be replaced as they wear out.
Run over by the cars parking next to
them.
Right?
But they're called flex posts because they're designed to take over 50 hits before they need to be replaced. And they're a great way to mark the lane to make sure that people park appropriately, creating the adequate space lined out in the paint. But you don't see them everywhere. There's lots of other solutions and creative materials that people can use. And then on the instance of Potomac Street, this was a phased approach and only going to be there for the first phase.
Well, as a talk show host, I'm designed to take 50 hits as well. So, I'm up to 48, too, so today could be a very exciting day. Steve Bloom, thank you for joining us this afternoon. You know, it depends on who you talk to about this. When I talk to some of the folks in Canton, just friends that I know, they describe what's happened over these last several weeks as, you know, almost everybody wants this bike lane on Potomac Street, but there's a small group of people who don't. And I assume they're pointing to you and your group. It's called Canton Neighbors for a Better Potomac Street Bike Lane. I mean, how do you assess the feelings of the community as Canton as a whole? I mean, is this something that there's a lot of consensus on about Potomac Street, or just not much consensus at all? Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me first start by saying that I think the name of our group says it all. We are really interested in working towards a better bike facility on Potomac Street. The vast majority of residents in Canton, my neighbors that I've spoken to about this situation, were excited to have a bike lane installed on Potomac Street. But the bottom line is that the design has been flawed from the beginning, and the implementation and communication, as Liz mentioned, has been poor. I got involved in this effort when one of the first days of installation of the lane, I came outside of my home to find our local ladder truck was stuck trying to turn onto Potomac Street. I spoke with the fire captain at that time and was told that the local fire company knew nothing about this lane being installed on the street, and that he would be contacting the mayor's office and our councilman to express his serious concerns about fire safety on the street. And so that's really what started this resident communication with the city. I started out with a number of emails back and forth with city officials to understand what was the plan for fire department and emergency vehicle access on my street. And when I wasn't able to get adequate answers, that's when I started to really work with a number of very committed neighborhood volunteers to organize. And, you know, we've now held over half a dozen meetings with over 80 residents, and we have engaged two out of the three neighborhood groups that that are in neighborhoods along Potomac Street, as well as the Maine Business Association of Canton, and over 600 resident petition signatures that have all asked for a seat at the table in working with the city to come up with a better design.
And is it your impression that all of these groups do have consensus about what the design needs to be? I mean, how the design should be improved? Do you have a specific list of things? I mean, obviously, if the fire truck can't fit down there, that's one of them. But are there a bunch of other things? Is it one or two other things, or is it a list of 15 things?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have actually come up with several principles that we want followed when it comes to designing a better bike lane for Potomac Street and a safer bike lane for Potomac Street. I can run through them very quickly. We want, first and foremost, to maintain fire code compliance. That has been our primary principle from the start. We also want to make sure that the principles of the Americans with Disabilities Act is followed to maintain handicap parking access for the residents of Potomac Street. We want to prioritize safety through design that conforms to traffic enforcement norms, and we want to follow the best practice guidelines laid out by organizations such as the Association of State Highway Transportation Officials and the National Association of City Transportation Officials, which was not done here.
All right, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the potential for a new design to meet those requirements. We have between one and two gazillion emails and phone calls of folks that want to weigh in on this, and we will get to everybody as we can. Steve Bloom joins us on the phone. He lives in Canton. He's a member of the Canton Neighbors for a Better Potomac Street Bike Lane group. Liz Cornish is here with me in the studio. She's the executive director of the Baltimore Bike Advocacy Group, Bike More, and Luke Broadwater is here as well. He covers local politics and City Hall and just about anything that happens in Charm City. 410-662-8780. That's how you can join us on the phone. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can also send us a tweet @MiddayTomHall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, WYPR.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow here on the program, another installment of our Living Questions series, where we explore religion and its role in the public sphere. We're going to talk to a researcher from the Pew Research Center and a few young city residents about the fact that fewer and fewer young people are identifying with organized religion. More and more people of faith are not finding that affiliating with a particular religion is necessary or beneficial to their spiritual lives. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. And theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review the latest offerings at the Contemporary American Theater Festival over in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. If you're just joining us today, I'm joined by Liz Cornish, the executive director of Bike More, an organization that works to improve bike infrastructure and policy in the city. Steve Bloom joins us on the phone. He's a member of a group called Canton Neighbors for a Better Potomac Street Bike Lane. And Luke Broadwater is here as well. He covers the city for the Baltimore Sun. We're talking about biking in Baltimore, and you are welcome to join us unless you are currently riding a bicycle. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. As I mentioned before the break, we do have a lot of emails. It seems that we're hearing from almost everyone who lives on Potomac Street, and I want to give you a couple of samples. This is from Sue, who says, I'm a resident of Canton. I live on Potomac Street. My neighbors and I, many of whom are bikers, are not against having a bike lane on our street, but feel that there should be a compromise with Bike More that benefits all of us. The configuration of bike, parking, and travel lanes as it stands is dangerous for everyone. I'm certain there can be a compromise between all of us for a better solution. So Liz Cornish, there's Sue's weighing in saying that, you know, compromise is possible here. When you hear Steve Bloom talk about the things that they had concerns with, are you confident that those concerns can be met?
Absolutely. I mean, I think anyone that spent any time reading our blog, following the things that we advocate for when there are concerns about safety, know that first and foremost, our work is about safety. We know that the way that you improve the safety of vulnerable road users is you reduce the speed of traffic. We know that the way that you improve the safety of people that need our city to have improved air quality and improved traffic congestion is you get people out of their cars. That means constructing high quality, comfortable, safe bike facilities. And we want those things to conform to national best practices. And we want those things to consider all road users, including those with disabilities. So I think we're all on the same page, which is incredibly encouraging. I think what's also encouraging is that through this process, and because that Bike More took action, we pressed the pause button on what we felt was an opportunity for the city to get to an inflection point in policy, as cities are to do. Cities change. And what had happened was we have an in-place fire code that didn't necessarily in all policy ways align with some of our goals for complete streets as a city. And that's an opportunity for this new administration to parse that out, to be thoughtful and considerate, and make sure that the goals of both policies and code really do meet our future goals as a city, which I think is to improve safety, create livability, and create great places for people to live. So we were pleased to hear that folks that Steve are organizing, they have an opportunity to sit down with the city later next week. So I think all of their goals are being met. And I think knowing what has been achieved so far in terms of our settlement is that every stakeholder that had to come to the table, including Bike More, had to make compromises in order to continue to move forward on creating safe, comfortable bike infrastructure.
So Luke Broadwater, when it comes to this city, as I mentioned, Mayor Pugh has just hired the last couple of weeks a new transportation secretary. There was also a person that dealt specifically with bikes, and that position is open, as I understand it, and that has yet to be filled. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And in fact, the city's Department of Transportation was without a permanent head for, I believe, over a year. There was an acting director. Now they've hired somebody for that job, but we've been several months now without a bike director or a bike planner. So it'll be interesting to see who they hire for that job. A lot of people in the bike community have been concerned about some of the things coming out of the administration. The mayor said not too long ago that she wanted to review all bike lanes across the city, which I think prompted some concern. But and there's been some outcry from Roland Park about their bike lane. The civic group up there voted to ask the city to remove it.
Should tell folks who don't know that area of town, it runs on Roland Avenue between Cold Spring and Northern Parkway.
Right. But to date, the mayor has said the only thing that they're actually considering taking out was the Canton one. And now, obviously, there's been this compromise that the city has reached with with Bike More.
And Steve Bloom, before we take some of our calls and read a few more emails, I mean, if the concerns that you've just articulated before we went to the break, if those are met, then is this end of story? Everything's fine?
So here is the issue with what has happened with this settlement between Bike More and the city. Residents were not at the table. When Bike More filed their lawsuit, a group of residents came together to file as a party to that suit. We were never included in any of the settlement talks, and so we have not seen a plan. We don't know whether any of these concerns are addressed, and you know, what we want is a better process and a voice in deciding what happens in our neighborhood and making certain that our street is safe.
As I understand it, the mayor has promised a review period and a period of community comment. So it doesn't sound like you're not going to ever be at the table when as this process continues. I mean, is it a matter of degree in terms of when you are involved in the process? If you're involved in the during the settlement of the lawsuit, you were not a party to the lawsuit. Is that correct?
We did file as an intervener party to make sure that residents' voices were represented in the suit. There was actually, from what we understand from the city solicitor, no official settlement agreement. Actually, Bike More withdrew their suit. If there had been an official settlement agreement, the motion for us to join the lawsuit would have needed to have been addressed before that official settlement was reached. So actually, I believe that Bikemore has withdrawn the suit.
All right. Well, Liz Cornish, I mean, I know you're in the middle of a legal proceeding, and you got to be careful, and you've been advised by your attorney to, you know, be careful about what you're saying publicly here. But I mean, can you respond in any way?
I think the main thing is to ensure that this isn't, I think what we can all agree on is that this is not the best way to design streets in our city, and that what we need is an administration with a comprehensive transportation and land use vision that sets forth what our goals are in terms of mode share and safety and what that will require of residents. You know, when you buy a house on a street, you don't buy the public right of way. And as a city, the administration needs the ability to make decisions that are going to suit the needs of all residents, both current and future. And we're hopeful that we're headed in that direction. But as a city, certainly compared to other cities in North America, we have a ways to go.
Here's an email from Tim echoing people's concerns about the communication process. He says, as an avid cyclist, I was disgusted at the process that resulted in the Roland Park bike lane. It was predetermined as an outcome with the merest veneer of community feedback. The result is an unsafe atrocity and parking that puts parked cars dangerously close to moving cars. So there's, you know, as you say, maybe not the best way to design a bike lane. Matthew in Canton, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thank you. So I'm a bit surprised by the objections about emergency vehicles not being able to get down Potomac. I grew up on a street much narrower that had parking on both sides, and there was absolutely no way for an emergency vehicle to get down that street. So I'm a little surprised.
So there are some alleys in Fells Point that I can think of. I mean, Luke Roder, there are places where a fire truck can't pull right up in front of your door.
Yeah, if you were to go around the city, I think you'd find many situations where the larger fire vehicles can't get down the street. I think that's true.
Let's take a couple more calls if we can sneak them in before we take a break. Angela in Mount Vernon, thanks for your call to Midday. Welcome. All right, let's go to Tom in Mount Vernon. Tom, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hi, everybody. I think bicycle lanes are a good thing. I think the use of bicycles is excellent. Cuts down air pollution. It cuts down traffic, everything else. But I'm a disabled guy. I'm an elderly. And I have trouble crossing the bicycle lanes because you never know when those things are coming. They have no warning devices on them, no bells or whistles or anything. And I find that crossing the traffic lane, more than one occasion, like cars or trucks will get stopped to let me across. But when I cross that bike lane, I've got to be very careful. It's too bad that bicycles are not required by law to have a bell or a whistle or something on them to let people know so they don't get hit by a bike.
And, Tom, are you in a wheelchair when you're traversing the street?
No, I'm not real bad. I've got a bad hip.
Uh-huh. And so you've had problems with people on bikes not giving you the right of way?
A couple times, but now I stop and look carefully both directions. I have to be more careful crossing the bike lane than I do the traffic lane.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Liz, you coined a phrase, or I don't know if you coined it, but somebody coined a phrase. I've seen it on your website called bike lash, which is this reaction that certain drivers have, pedestrians have. Tom's complaint is not unique. I've heard people talk about bikes. I know folks who run, they're jogging and running for exercise, have been hit by bikes while they're running and stuff. And I've heard, I know of at least two instances of friends of mine who've had that incident. Where do you think we are with this sort of what appears to be an inherent tension between people who are riding bicycles and people who are getting around in other ways?
Well, I think it's really important to zoom out a little bit. Everybody that rides a bike in the city of Baltimore is a resident of Baltimore. They're your neighbors. They're your friends. They're your coworkers. And one of the things that we really try to do is humanize this conversation about street safety. Drivers are not just drivers. They are people fully capable of making decisions. I think what we have to consider is where the injuries and the risk are likely to occur. And so, yes, absolutely. People who ride bikes should have a bell. It's actually the law. and people who ride bikes should
be
careful.
It is. It's the law. You have to have a belt.
Yeah. And
is it the law that you have to wear a helmet?
No, it is not the law that you have to wear a helmet. People who ride bikes absolutely should yield to pedestrians. And when they don't, that pisses me off. But here's the deal. When you think about who is vulnerable on our roadways, and when you think about how our streets overall, writ large, throughout the entire city, are designed to create a hierarchy that prioritizes the speed of moving cars over the safety of vulnerable road users, that is our issue of advocacy. And I am on the heels of having to go to court to just ask the city to pause before downgrading the quality of the street for all users to make sure that we reach a compromise. I'm planning 2 memorial bike rides for cyclists that live in Baltimore that were killed these last 3 weeks. And so while I am sympathetic to people who are concerned about the changes, and while I want people that live in the neighborhood to champion things that I think make neighborhoods great as a resident that lives on Maryland Avenue, I also have to fight and be relentless in my pursuit of safety of people who walk and ride bikes in the city.
And Steve Bloom, you talked about, you know, the fact that it's your understanding that almost everybody does want safe bike lanes on Potomac Street and throughout the city. But, I mean, do you consider yourself in opposition to organizations like Bike More, or organizations that advocate on behalf of cyclists?
Well, Tom, what we're opposed to is an outside group like Bike More telling the residents of Canton what our bike lane should look like and overruling the judgment of the Baltimore City Fire Department, who has stated specifically that the bike lane design for Potomac Street is unsafe. This two-way cycle track creates the illusion of safety, but in fact, issues such as the visibility between bikers and cars when cars are making right-hand turns, cutting off bikers, that concern was never taken into account in the original design. There is very mixed safety studies in terms of two-way protected cycle tracks. In fact, a number of studies indicate that two-way protected cycle tracks are actually less safe than biking on the roadway, precisely because of the intersection concerns.
And you're suggesting if there were one-way cycle tracks, and by cycle tracks we're talking about bike lanes, I mean, if they were just went one direction, that would improve their safety? Is that the contention of the studies that you're referring to?
One of the main issues that's created by these two-way cycle tracks is the fact that when you're putting a lane of parked cars between the two-way bike traffic and the travel lane, when cars are making a turn and crossing this bike track, they cannot see the bikes that are going to be coming from behind these parked cars.
Yeah, and let me give Liz Cornish a chance to respond to that.
So a couple of things. I think one of the things that's really important to emphasize, that Potomac Street was not designed in a vacuum. Potomac Street was signed by traffic engineers. And when you design something on paper, as Luke suggested, you do field work to make adjustments. That was the process that was taking place when ultimately the administration made the decision to remove the lane and begin the planning process over. I think what Steve's speaking to is this idea of what is better for in terms of bicycle safety. Is it better for bicyclists to take the lane, or is it better for bicyclists to be in protected facilities? What I can tell you is that the number one way to increase the safety of people who bike on the roadway is to increase the number of people riding bikes. And I will tell you that protected facilities do just that. You look at any protected facility or any mixed-use or multi-use trail in the country, and as soon as it's constructed, bicycle ridership, walking increases 400% in some instances. So what we're trying to do by creating a safe, connected, protected bike network throughout the entire city is to invite people that would not normally consider themselves desire, you know, they don't desire to bike in mixed traffic, to invite them back to biking And the more people who are biking on the roads, that does change behavior. And that makes people who are driving be more careful, be more attentive. And that ultimately is what saves lives.
Got to take a break. We will be back with more conversation about cycling and biking here in Baltimore. Steve Bloom is on the phone. He's a member of the neighborhood group called Canton Neighbors for a Better Potomac Street Bike Lane. Liz Cornish is a bike advocate and the executive director of Bike More. Luke Broadwater covers local politics and City Hall and just about everything else for the Baltimore Sun. We'll have more on this when we come back. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can also follow us on Twitter, of course, @MiddayTomHall. Stay there. Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you're just joining us, we're talking about bikes in Baltimore. There was a bit of a controversy in Canton recently when a new bike lane was installed on Potomac Street. Bike lanes on Roland Avenue and Maryland Avenue have been a little less problematic. Mayor Catherine Pugh has said that all of the bike lanes in the city are being reviewed to make sure that they're safe for riders, walkers, and drivers alike. Joining me this hour, reporter Luke Broadwater, who's been covering the bike lane story for the Baltimore Sun. Liz Cornish, she's the executive director of Bike More, a bike advocacy group here in Baltimore. And on the phone, Steve Bloom. He's with a group called Canton Neighbors for a Better Potomac Street Bike Lane. You can join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to find us on Twitter, @MiddayTomHall. From Remington, we have Andrew emailing and says, Mr. Bloom's group was originally called Canton Neighbors Against the Potomac Street Bike Lane. They formed an opinion about the bike lane and found justification for obstructing it later. And then Janice from Canton says, only those who live in Canton should have a say and no one else. So take that, Andrew from Remington. But this does bring up, Luke Broadwater, a larger issue about the sort of general transportation philosophy and strategy for the city of Baltimore. Just less than a month ago, Baltimore Link was introduced with a newly designed bus system. There's a whole lot of people who have some serious issues with that. But in terms of the overarching transportation strategy in the city, you mentioned that we haven't had a bike person in the transportation department now for some months. Where do you think it stands?
I'll say, so sort of historically speaking, after World War II, the city really started to prioritize cars over everything else. The trolleys were ripped out. The roads were widened. And we didn't see, and now we're left with the situation where the current city council is trying to figure out how do we change some of these decisions that were made. We know that many residents in East and West Baltimore, I think a majority in some neighborhoods, lack access to an automobile. No one they know in their family has an automobile. So they've got to get to work somehow. And is that by bus? Is that by bike lane? Is that a safe sidewalk and or walking path? So I know that the city council is going to be introducing some updated complete streets legislation, which will prioritize racial equity and make sure that these types of infrastructure, bike lanes and bus lanes and things like that, are being spread equally around the city. So I think that's the next step we'll see on the horizon.
And I want to get to the phones, but Liz Cornish, real briefly, we also have here in Baltimore a bike share program. There are planned, at least the plans are for 50 stations eventually in Baltimore City. I think we have 20-something up and running now. What's your understanding of how frequently people are using those? These are people who don't own bikes, I guess, or if they own bikes, they don't have them with them. They can find a bike in one location, ride it over to another location, and leave it there.
Yeah, so bike share does a couple of things. One, it makes biking normalized. So you hop on a bike share bike, you're wearing your everyday clothes, you use it for short trips. And because of the low cost and the low barrier to entry, you're going to see a lot of people that maybe gave up biking as a kid, that now see a bike share station along their normal travel path and they're going to choose to use it. I think what we need to see from the city is, you know, we know that the usage is off the charts, particularly for when it launched in October and that we had our first 6 months of use in cold weather. We're seeing the usage outpace station or systems of similar size. And we're seeing really exciting metrics around which stations see the most use. And so what we know that does is that signifies to the city that it's working and that the demand is high. And what we hope the city responds to that with is more stations in more neighborhoods as fast as possible.
Let's go to the phones. Jessica in Charles Village, welcome to Midday with Steve Bloom, Liz Cornish, and Luke Broadwater.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. My comment is based, and actually I would like to direct it to Ms. Cornish because I believe, and I might be mistaken, she said that she also lives in Charles Village on Maryland Avenue. I live here as well. I travel across the intersection of 26th Street and Maryland Avenue multiple times a day sometimes. Besides the parking and the traffic situation, my concern, and I respect bikers, you guys can do what you want. I look out for you guys. I give you the, you know, the space that they, you guys are allotted. But at that intersection, Maryland Avenue is a one-way street. If you're not familiar with the area or you're not paying attention, I have to remind myself, make sure I look to the left since that's not normally where I would look for traffic to be coming from for bikes. And there's been close calls with other people. I've heard other people talk about it. My concern is if it's a one-way street and you just all of a sudden pop up these bike lanes where bikers are coming from the opposite direction where no one is expecting them, it is only a matter of time before someone gets hit.
Well, thanks for the call, Jessica. And Liz Cornish, I mean, it's not unheard of that bikers are, in fact, hit. There was a terrible story a few years ago of an elderly woman who was driving did not look in her rearview mirror on the right, and there was a bike behind her. She turned and hit the guy who was in a coma for the longest time, and they died. And of course, the very well-known case of Tom Palermo, a very beloved figure in the biking community and in the community at large, hit by a drunk driver in a bike lane. He was in a protected bike lane.
Yeah, so in Bike More short history, we have been involved in a lot of advocacy with families that have lost loved ones. Most recently, this last week, my good friend Jeremy Pope, who was killed. And I think here's what I'll say to Jessica. Absolutely. When streets change, when the flow of traffic changes, it is really upon the city to do incredibly good public outreach and public education. Signage helps. Specific bike signalization helps. I'm still frustrated that at 27th, one block north, if you're headed northbound, you don't have any light indicating when it's your turn to go as a bicyclist. So these types of things are important, and neighbors and residents should absolutely push the city to make these improvements. But I want to pick up on one thing that Jessica said. She said, it forces me to pay attention. I think that's a good thing when you're operating a really large vehicle that quite frequently takes people's lives when people are inattentive behind the wheel.
So Chris sends us an email and says, why is Bike More so insistent on a double lane cycle track that runs against traffic? Why can't it be one way on one street and one way on another street?
So I want to be clear about why we took this action and what we hope to gain moving forward. Bike More is intent on safe, comfortable, all ages bike facilities. In many instances, those are protected lanes. Why was a two-lane protected bike lane designated for Potomac? Bike More actually did not advocate or come up with that specific design, not because we don't think it's good, but because we weren't involved or invited into the process that early. So ultimately, what happened is through these community planning charrettes, when the neighbors in the area identified the street as needing a protected bike facility, the bike ped planner at the time, Caitlin Doolin, looked at creative ways to get this funded. As a city, we don't spend hardly any money from the general fund on improving transportation infrastructure at large. So most of what you see, whether it's a bus lane or a bike lane, comes from state and federal grants. The federal grant that was written for Potomac Street is approximately $700,000. The actual bike lane part probably only costs around $200,000 to $250,000. The rest of that is stormwater management. By reallocating the space on an already wide two-lane, one-way street, you are able to create the space that you need to do the innovative stormwater management that allowed us to secure this type of federal funding. Everybody benefits from stormwater management when we do that in a neighborhood. And so I want to make clear, that's why it's a two-lane bike facility. Also, is cost. If you separate a bike facility, that's a lot more paint and a lot more flex posts that you have to purchase as a city. And considering that we're going grant to grant on this stuff throughout the city, rather than coming up with a comprehensive plan about how we fund that through the general fund, that's what we're faced with.
Let's try to sneak in a couple more calls. Chuck in Canton, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your patience.
Thank you for your patience.
Speaking of patience, I'm on hold with Chuck. Rosemary in Roland Park, welcome to Midday. How you doing today?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great. Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening very patiently, and it's a very modulated and well-thought conversation. I have to admit, I knew nothing about the planning in Roland Park. That's the area I'm interested in. But as a person who goes there now and sees the effects of what was put in place, it is truly a mess. The bikers don't feel safe to ride in that narrow bike lane that's right against the curb. The cars now have to park 4 feet away from the curb, so they're in this designated spot where they have to back in. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to do it. Then they put up these, like, posts that I guess were flexible, so now they just back into those and knock those over. I honestly have never seen regular people who would go to work on their bikes riding in the bike lane. All I have ever seen are the more enthusiastic bike riders riding four abreast, continuing down Roland Avenue. And it's just not working where we are. If I park my car to go into a store, I have to, and I applaud what she said about being extra vigilant, but it's like taking my life in my hand.
Yeah.
Get
right,
my
well,
door
thanks.
Open because I'm going right into
thanks
oncoming
for,
traffic.
Thanks for the call, Rosemary. We have another email from Tracy. It says the reason that cars are getting hit on Roland Avenue and that cyclists need protected lanes is because drivers speed like crazy and they're distracted by their various devices. I can't even count the number of times people honk at me for not going fast enough or stopping for pedestrians in the crosswalk. If we could deal with this outlandish behavior, we'd have a good start towards having a safer city. Luke Broadwater, tell us a little bit more about what's going on in Roland Park. It sounds like, to hear some folks tell say it, it's falling apart at the seams. What's going on?
Well, so shortly after Tom Palermo died, tragically killed, a protected bike lane was put in. He was riding in a non-protected bike lane. And what we mean by that is putting up posts or using a line of parked cars or some other way to protect the cyclists from the traffic. It's been up for a little while now. Community Association had lots of concerns with the design, and the city made a number of changes to it. I would say 2, 3, 4 changes, and the cost kept going up of the project because of all that. Now the Canton, I think it's called the Civic League, the Roland Park Civic League voted to ask the city to remove it until a safer bike lane, in their view, can be put in.
And as we said, the mayor has resolved to review all the bike lanes at
yes.
this point.
So, they cite a number of near accidents and some car mirrors being knocked off, things like that. They have their concerns.
Yeah. Steve Bloom, I want to have you get the last word here. We have literally 15 seconds left. Do you support a bike lane on Potomac Street, or are you more in favor of moving it to some other place?
Absolutely. We definitely support a bike lane on Potomac Street, one that makes sense for the local context of the street and balances the safety of all residents.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I appreciate everybody coming by. Luke Broadwater, who covers local politics in City Hall for the Baltimore Sun, Liz Cornish from Bike More, they advocate for better bike policy and infrastructure in the city, and Steve Bloom, he's with a neighborhood group called Canton Neighbors for a Better Potomac Street Bike Lane. Thanks to all of you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow on Midday, it's another installment of Living Questions, our monthly series exploring religion in contemporary life. To Tomorrow we're going to talk to a guy from Religion Research at Pew Research, rector at Emmanuel Episcopal Church, an assistant rector there, and a guy from the Repair the World at Jewish Volunteer Connection, as well as an organizer for Build. We're going to talk about the growing number of young Americans who don't identify with any organized religion. We'd love to hear your thoughts about that as well tomorrow here on Midday Plus. Theater critic Jay Wynn Russick has some thoughts about the annual Contemporary American Theater Festival over in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Lunch was provided today by Dangerously Delicious Pies. They've got locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the square in Canton and at 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Their menu includes a large variety of homemade sweet and savory pies and quiches. I'm Tom Hall. Appreciate everybody calling and emailing and tweeting and listening. Have a great day.